All right. Well, Bethany's back. Everybody's ready?
Yep.
Yes.
Awesome. We'll just jump right into it. My name is Joshua C. McMahon, and I kind of got y'all together to do this cool little podcast with D&D, and we're going to go ahead and go over how we can break all of the rules.
Hey, guys. I'm Rachel, and I'm going to help break rules. Yay.
I'm Tony. I've become obsessed with D&D, and I know most of the rules because of it.
And I'm Bethany. I think I am the DM that this is all in spite of or in honor of, depending on how you look at it. So I'm excited to be here.
And we'll get a web address for this one as well, which I'm still looking into. But you can send your feedback for this show in specific to, let's see here. How do I do this with the Twitter? It's at rulesaswritten, hashtag feedback. That is how you send your feedback. Whew, I didn't put the .com on there because that's not how Twitter works. Yes.
Woohoo!
Woo!
But yeah, Bethany runs, is DMing a game. Tony's DMing a game. But Bethany seems to be the one that we all try and break more and more often, especially now that she's inserted giants into the plot.
Yeah, I think I've set myself up for challenges, I'll say, by giving you guys lots of opportunities to exploit creative ideas I thought I had that, have loopholes.
It's the best when we get to loopholes. So we'll apply physics to them and see how much we can shatter it. So thank God the DM can actually shut all this down. Otherwise we'd break every game. So what's the latest that's been happening in your game that like caused this particular bit of discussion we're about to have?
Oh, was that for me? Sorry.
Or whoever.
Now it's 'cause in Bethany's game, we're now in a cloud giant flying castle. Even before we went up, we were just really concerned with falling, particularly your character, Rachel.
Yeah. So my character had been thrown from the top of a spire, some 400-600 feet up in the air, would not have survived.
That was like the beginning of the game.
That was really early on.
Session 2 or 3.
Well, we made the big mistake of splitting the party.
We haven't done that since.
No, we have not.
I'd say the fear of falling definitely goes back to that original incident with the Feathergale Spire.
Yeah, that was only a 400-foot drop.
Yeah.
Which was fortunately not fatal due to, I think we called it Deus Ex Arachacron.
Yeah.
I think we did. Oh, I forgot about that.
It rolls right off the tongue.
It does.
Well, just to paint the picture for the audience, too, she was somewhere else in this, what was it, the Air Temple?
Yeah, it was the Feathergale Spire, but... Yeah, it was the Air Keep. Do we need to say anything about spoilers? Because that is kind of a spoiler.
I guess so. I guess we can preface this with this is some spoil. This is a little bit of, well,
We could essentially say this is a little spoiler within Princes of the Apocalypse.
Yeah, it's not a big spoiler. It's just a small one. Basically, if you get separated from the party at the top of the tower, you will get thrown off. That is in the book, so...
I guess we'll just, we can either go with spoilers or we just won't mention specifics. So in the mystery book that is being, in the mystery book that we're playing right now, the campaign that we're totally not going to talk about what it is because then we'd spoil it. There is a part where if you split the campaign or split the party, then, someone will get thrown off the top if you attack or provoke an attack from the other side. So what were we doing? We were basically harassing
the boss.
We were interrogating. Yes, right. Yeah.
Well, it's okay. Once the person gets thrown off and you find out about it, you just go on a killing spree of everyone inside.
Oh, God.
Murder them all.
Or at least that's what we did.
Neutral evil.
A little bit.
Yeah.
There were some discussion of alignments following that session.
Meanwhile, I was planning my next character because I was pretty sure I was going to be splatted.
Yeah, you're like, I'm dead.
I only need to level 2.
We all freaked out, though, because what we were, he was talking through a sending stone, wasn't he?
He used a message spell. But he was just like, throw her off the tower.
Yep.
So we knew before it happened, like, what was about to happen. And so it was a really dramatic.
Yeah, when we ran up to find out and it's already gone.
So we thought you were actually dead. But you were not. You were totally fine. But it did spark some discussion about, like, terminal velocity way later now that we're on this other floating castle of, like, what... And I think Tony and I, we got into this big argument about at work of why it's only 20d6. Is that right?
Yeah, that falling damage in D&D, it's 1d6 for every 10 feet to a maximum of 20d6, which is only like 200 feet. But that means at 200 feet or higher, you're only taking 20d6. Right now, we're at level 9, and 2 or 3 of our characters could easily like take all of that damage and still be conscious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the book doesn't... It's actually a really short section on falling damage. It's only three sentences. So it kind of leaves it, I think, open for DMs to sort of build on that if it's more than 200 feet, which technically shouldn't come up a lot unless you're in a cloud castle.
You know, like 1,200 feet above the ground?
Yeah.
Depending on what floor we're on, I suppose. Which I think we're actively, like, live counting now. We're, like, 13, 14, 15, 100 feet. Like, constantly making sure, like, how far up we are right now.
Mm-hmm. We just want to confirm.
Yeah, hug the ground, everybody. Hug it. You'll save a D6 or two.
We're trying to figure out how big the crater's going to be.
Oh.
Yeah, the impact is a separate thing, too. So, Tony, do you want to tell the story of what happened to your character?
Oh, well, even before we were worried about falling, we were dealing with this. But eventually we did have a lovely air battle on some flying griffins against a white dragon. And my character and the griffin both got knocked unconscious at the same time. And just plummeted the 1,200 feet.
Well, it all happened at once, too, because what was it? Like, it was the breath attack happened. Even you, Bethany, were like, oh, God, I've killed half the party.
It's the worst. It's worse than killing the whole party. Like, it's just you kill half of them and you traumatize the rest.
And so we had to figure out who, because we're all on mounts, so it was like, okay, you're conscious, but your mount's dead. You're dead, but your mount is fine. And so there was all these different logistics that had to happen.
And I was still on land with no mount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were fine.
Yeah, Rachel's character had, for some reason, decided to avoid going out on an into aerial combat.
In hindsight, made the best decision.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think, Tony, your character was dead and your bird was dead.
I was unconscious.
He was making death saves.
My bird was dead. I failed the first death save and then I hit the ground. So that's two more failed death saves. So I was dead by that point. Fortunately, we have a great cleric who was able to get to the ground in time and revivify me.
That was Josh's character.
Well, I was dead though. So I was the, or no, oh, I wasn't dead. I wasn't dead. I keep saying dead. That's wrong.
You were unconscious.
I was unconscious.
But your griffin was still up.
Yeah, my griffin was fine. And then another player in the campaign.
Our sorcerer, Wayward. Because Wayward still had his griffin up, so quick fly over to you to shove a healing potion in your mouth to wake you up.
But Chris's character was fine, but his bird was dead.
Yes, so he was starting to fall, and they had Rachel's character and our sorcerer Wayward were able to rush over and catch him.
But it was basically like, okay, who's on first? Somebody's on second. I don't know who's on third, and somebody's passed out on fourth.
And everyone going, like, there was a lot of anxiety in the room. It was very exciting.
Lots of deep breathing.
Lots of mapping.
Very terrifying.
Oh, God, yeah. And so what? We picked Chris up out of his bird, threw a potion in my mouth.
Yep.
And then I flew down to save Uthal.
Knowing he was going to die before you could get there.
Oh, we all knew I was already dead.
Thank God I've got Revivify.
Oh, yeah.
Yay, Clarice.
But in terms of the terminal velocity, what was the damage you actually took? Do you remember?
I only wound up, I actually rolled all 20 D6, and it was 79 points of damage. My max HP is 84.
Oh, my God.
So if I was at full health, I would have survived. And yeah, it's massive damage, but
been in a lot of pain.
It would have hurt.
Uthal takes massive damage for breakfast.
He does take it about once a session, on average.
Just to explain this, that my character is a Goliath fighter.
Awful stupid.
Not real smart, but
really
strong.
He is average intelligence, and he's uncannily good at arcana checks.
I was just going to say, he makes every one of those arcana checks. Don't you dare badmouth him.
As he runs into the face of a dragon.
Yeah. He kind of did.
Hey, he'd still do it again.
But we were fighting about the terminal velocity, too, because you don't think 20d6 is enough, do you, Tony?
I don't think it's enough, because honestly, at level 9, at level 10... we're getting to the point where we could easily survive that fall and still remain conscious. That's why you and I were actually talking about what is terminal velocity. How far of a fall would you have to take before you reach terminal velocity?
And according to Google, we reach that as being, was it 1,800 feet? 1,880?
Yep.
So just under 1,900 feet. So for the purposes of D&D, what is that, like 190 D6?
That is 190 D6. And it says it takes anywhere from 10 to 14 seconds. That's only two rounds.
That's disgusting. That, okay, so... so
Or two and a half rounds.
A half.
Yeah.
They hit the ground.
So you can use your last standard action to just fetal position. I'm going to use my last movement to fetal.
My last free action to poop.
That's assuming you're conscious when this is happening.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, since the book is so kind of loosey-goosey on, like, falling speed and falling damage... If, correct me if I'm wrong, Tony. I pretty much allowed three rounds for him to fall, during which time the Josh's character sort of tried to catch up with him so that he would be there in time to cast Revivify. And also it gave him a chance to make his death saves.
Yeah, I wound up, according to the rules for this one, dropping at 400 feet per round.
Which was just my decision as DM, because there's not a lot of actual guidelines on it.
Physics don't exist.
Nope.
Yeah.
It's magic. It's okay.
Yeah, thank God they don't, because that's why we're going to break the game. But I've got my dice calculator here, too, and I just did the math on the 190 D6, and so we've got an average of 665 damage.
So we're dead. Even getting up to level 20, we're dead.
What's your level 20 health? Or what would you say is like a level 20 super strong, hardy, max con character?
Like over 200, right?
It's well over 200.
Shy of 300?
But nowhere near this much.
But you may not take your full max damage in that one. So you may be unconscious but not dead.
Oh, actually, no, you probably would be dead because I bet you'd go negative max with that.
It might be close depending on how... Because if he's maximum 300 and you're assuming the average roll, you could roll really, really crappy and it's all ones.
Let me tell you what the odds of that are.
Really high, right?
No, so I just did calculate this. If you take the average roll for a barbarian with max con, it winds up being about 245 HP.
Mm-hmm. You'd be dead.
Yeah, you'd be dead.
You'd be dead.
Everyone would be dead instantly.
Unless you've got a, like, jumbo basket of temp hit points.
Or take the toughness feat and a bunch of other feats to boost your health.
But most people... don't build their character intending to fall out of the sky. It's sort of an incidental occurrence.
Or unless you have that death guard on.
Death ward? That would technically save you.
It would hurt so bad.
That would totally save you. That would be excellent.
Yeah, that would drop you to 1 HP instead after you've, like, partially been crushed from the fall.
Oh, gosh.
Well, as long as you were conscious at the time you fell.
Yeah.
Well, you would have to be. Otherwise, death ward is not on you. Death ward keeps you conscious.
Right, that's true.
That would be the best.
Can you imagine getting knocked unconscious... drop to 1 HP because you have Death Ward on it, and then falling.
And then fall after that so you're conscious for this massive damage fall.
Yes.
That's the time to poop. Okay, but now let's really try to break this, because obviously Death Ward, that'll totally save you from a fall. But what about if you had a friend on the ground who has access to, say, a portal, like a teleportation circle?
All right, so the trouble with teleportation circle is, one, it takes a minute to cast, which means they need to be casting it before you even start falling.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be a straight-up accident, I think.
I guess if they had a scroll...
or a wish.
That's the only other way to do it.
Do we want to bring Wish into this? Because that kind of is a
wish
whole
Wish will break
other...
anything if the DM allows it.
No, it's just I'm so entertained by the idea of wishing for a teleportation circle instead of just, I wish my friend survived.
Thanks. You're like, I wish for a loophole. All right, well, what about Dimension Door? That was one we wanted to look at, because that's a casting type of action that the person falling could actually cast.
Okay, so then the question becomes, does your velocity keep with you if you cast Dimension Door?
All right, to read Dimension Door really quickly, it does have a range of 500 feet, so that allows you to teleport yourself anywhere up to 500 feet. And you arrive exactly at the spot you desire. It can be a place you can see, one you can visualize, or one you can describe by stating distance and direction. You can bring along objects as long as their weight doesn't exceed what you can carry. You can also bring one willing creature of your size or smaller who is carrying gear up to its carrying capacity. The creature must be within 5 feet of you when you cast the spell. If you would arrive in a place already occupied by another creature, you and the other creature would take force damage. And the spell would then fail to teleport you. So, the question then is, do you maintain that speed if you try and teleport yourself 500 feet in a specific direction?
Honestly, I would say no. I'd say it stopped. You arrive at that spot. So I'd say you as yourself are suddenly in this new position in a unaffected state by your previous velocity.
So then your best bet is, if you're falling, like, let's say 1,900 feet for terminal velocity, is wait until you're roughly 500 feet above the ground and dimension door towards the ground.
Well, alternatively, you could dimension door halfway to decrease the number of damage you're going to take. So you're only falling 50 feet instead of, you know, 19,000, because it's really hard to judge ground that's flying at your face. As someone who skydived, I can tell you, it is really hard to judge how far you are from the ground.
But yeah, you can essentially use it to minimize your damage. If you're falling quickly, you can dimension door down, and then by that rule set of just essentially your speed stops, you would be falling from a different height.
Yeah.
That's if we accept the premise that you don't continue with the same momentum.
I'm inclined to agree. There's nothing here that says you don't, and there's nothing else in the standard rule set that would take into account velocity. So this would be something you could save yourself with. But taken further, could you airship in to a capital, drop in on like the king's palace, and use dimension door
to just get in?
Yeah, as a way to like assassinate the king from the heavens.
It's a halo drop.
It's a halo drop, yeah. High altitude, low opening.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, at what point, like, okay, now let's do this intentionally. I'm going to jump out of this building, and then, like, the thief who has to, like, rob the ruby from the precipice of a mountain, who then just, like, gets it and then drops off the mountain to dimension door somewhere else, lower and safer.
Hell yeah.
At what point is the DM like, okay, screw you guys.
It almost seems like, though, that's the intention of the spell to allow you to do that, since it gives an example, 200 feet straight downward.
Yeah.
Which really only makes sense as a direction if you're going into open space. Otherwise, I don't know why you'd want to go 200 feet straight downward, because you might be going into earth or stone.
Well, unless you know there's caverns.
Well, then you take damage. The only thing is that there you might know of an underground tunnel or an underground cave, and that's why you would do it.
I guess, but you see what I'm saying. It seems like they left it open.
It is. It's odd that it specifically says, as an example, 200 feet straight downward. My only other thought is, let's say it doesn't actually stop your momentum, you're still limiting the distance to the ground, so you would be minimizing damage.
Yeah. At the very least, you're cutting out 500 feet.
So this is how you become a bard assassin, is what you're saying.
Yes, let's roll with that. New characters. Bard assassin. Let's do it.
The most loved of all characters. Oh,
I want him to have like a flute that's doubles as a knife.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, or like a blowpipe.
Oh.
I think it should be bagpipes.
Blowpipe.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool.
That'd be excellent.
Just needs to hit the right note to shoot it.
Hey, Josh, did we ever say at the beginning of this that we're doing 5th edition rules?
Nope. So I guess this is a good time.
Yeah. Just realized.
Didn't you want to maybe eventually branch out into other editions and or rule sets?
Yeah, like, I didn't want to, like, keep this closed to any kind of, like, I guess we'll go with, like, the same, kind of like universes in superhero movies, where, like, each universe has its own set of rules. Like, let's not blend the universes, otherwise we can do whatever we wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Essentially, in this case, in this particular instance, we're dealing with 5th edition rules.
Yeah. Episode 1, 5th edition rules, because it's what we know.
Exactly, exactly.
Because it's what we're currently playing.
Well, yeah, I know, Rachel, you've got other rule sets in the works.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, dear. But yeah, 5th edition rules for D&D, but we can cover any other particular kind of tabletop or whatever it is, just as long as we can take a arbitrary set of rules and go, wow, they left this kind of open. Let's shatter it.
Yeah, and then people could listen to this and be like, wow, they totally didn't take this into consideration, and we will learn something.
My favorite is going to be the feedback on this. Like, when people, like, think of things that we can't even, you know, like with the, like with the Simulacrum army thing, which we'll get to in a
Simulacrum.
Oh, God, it's starting. No.
We love you.
I'm going to mispronounce that every time.
Murdekernirnirns, magnificent.
Become the Swedish chef.
Crap. But yeah, well, like with that one, like obviously some of these, and I guess we'll try and avoid getting things from offline, and we'll just try and see like what comes up in our game with our limited creativity versus the entire power of the internet working behind breaking a rule set.
What you're saying, Josh, is you want to discover these things organically.
Yeah, which I think we've already so far been pretty good at doing, because you've already had to put limits on the number of potions we can have. And
yeah, I haven't had to whip out the because I said so yet, but we've been really close.
Because I'm the DM and I said so.
I've almost gotten there, but I'm holding it for something really, really heinous that I have overlooked.
Like Lich best friend, like when we find a way of making our Lich the best friend ever.
Yeah, and then you want to set him up with the Shadow Dragon.
Oh, it would make the cutest couple.
That's not a terrible idea.
I think it's a great idea.
They'd be the cutest couple ever.
Yeah, right? Just super powerful, evil creatures.
Well, they both have similar interests. They're both evil.
He's not evil.
They both hate leaving home.
Yeah, yeah. They could have a lovely little, like, Skype relationship.
A message relationship.
Yeah.
They'll just cast sending to each other over and over again.
Yeah, that'll be excellent. And liches are totally evil. I don't know that they should be.
No, they're not.
They have to sacrifice a soul to stay liches.
Hey, 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 he had extenuating circumstances.
He didn't choose the lich life. It chose him.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It sounds like you're saying thug life.
That's perfect. But I think it would be really interesting to have, like, an early lich who's not quite evil yet, who's, like, fighting against it as a narrative thing. But that's totally unrelated. Would probably break the game, because...
Oh, completely.
Yeah, because liches
baby
are...
Baby lich?
Yeah, like...
Baby lich.
What's the CR of a lich, Tony?
21.
There it is.
Yeah.
I like liches. They're cool.
I thought it was only like a 17.
No, liches are over 20.
That's why you guys, when you met the lich, I was like, please don't fight it. Please don't. And you guys didn't. You actually made friends with him-ish.
It's immune to non-magical weaponry.
I made friends with him.
Yeah. No, he gave you an item.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he did. You're right.
Bonding.
Yeah, the amulet. The
yeah, which has been a huge consistent help, I'd say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you get set on fire repeatedly, it's nice to have extra HP.
Yeah, and fire resistance things, finally.
Yep. I don't know anybody who's been set on fire more than you, Ash, which is really appropriate given your player name.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's not intentional. I know that there's a theory that the DM is out to get the players. I'm really not. These things just happen.
That's what makes for an interesting journey.
Yeah.
And burnt bears.
And burnt bears. And toasted wigs.
So many wasted wigs.
Oh, the wigs.
How much gold have you spent on wigs?
I don't even know.
He spent like 100 gold on wigs throughout the course of the campaign so far. It's hard when you're naturally bald.
So for the, yeah, so for the poor listeners who are hopefully holding on here, we've got, what is your character is, what race are they, Ash?
Earth Genasi. Well, half Earth Genasi, half elf.
Okay, so they're bald.
Yeah, she's completely bald, and she likes to attempt to fit in, because she's also has very pale, like, almost alabaster white skin with, like, pink veining, and she wants to, like, blend in, so she puts on wigs and pretty dresses, you know, with armor, and...
Yeah.
And her bear, and her mini donkey, and her mouse, and her 10 orphans. Fits right in.
She's a paladin, by the way, not a druid or a ranger.
Yeah.
Finer detail.
And a very eclectic paladin. But did you mention the bear?
Did I say the bear?
You said the bear, briefly.
It was the first in a long line of acquisitions.
Pets. They're pets. They're all pets.
No. They're acquisitions, and I include the chef, Grendo, that you acquired in that list.
Yeah, he's still a pet.
Even though he's a human.
Whoa now. Drow totally support owning of humans, so this should be not weird.
No, slavery is accepted by some evil races.
By some evil races.
In D&D. Please include that whole quote, Josh. Don't
But yeah, the bear's gotten, lit on fire?
The bear was attacked by 3 hellhounds who all breathed fire onto it.
Yep. I was caught in those blasts as well, because I was standing right next to my bear.
Yep, so you got nice and toasty in your armor, and your bear has no more hair.
Nope.
That bear had a hard life.
That's why she doesn't come with me.
Her hair's mostly grown back.
Which is remarkably fast, considering the time.
It's been like a month. It's like... stubble, but like fuzzy stubble.
That must be a really scary looking bear, man.
It's still not pretty.
Yeah. Hey, listeners, go look up hairless bear.
All right, so
we're losing topic a little.
That's fine. That's
yeah,
fine. That's
I
fine.
Feel like this is going to become a podcast where we just share D&D stories if we're not careful.
Yeah, true.
Which is not a bad thing. But
it's not bad.
Rachel, I think you wanted to say something.
I was just going to say, go look up hairless bears.
listeners.
Oh, don't.
No. No one should ever Google hairless bears.
It's final.
Stuff of nightmares.
It's final. I'm putting it in the show notes.
Yes.
Now I have to find this.
Oh, God.
Don't do it, Josh.
Oh, man.
You can't unsee
things. Oh, God. Oh. Oh, there's a lot of hairless things here.
Yes.
Don't do it, Josh.
Oh, this is a bad place. Did you know there's a giant shirt of a hairless cat? We're getting way off topic. Fixing this.
So we were talking about using portals as we fall.
Yes.
Yeah. Dimension Door, I think we covered pretty...
Dimension Door, excellent. Featherfall, obviously. That was there anything in Featherfall besides natural use?
Featherfall is... essentially, the question is, if the spell ends before you hit the ground, do you start at the level that the spell ends? At the height that the spell ends?
Yeah. Does your Featherfallness basically stop your momentum, and it begins again once the spell is up if you're falling thousands of feet.
So Featherfall will allow you to fall up to 600 feet. So 60 feet per round, up to 1 minute, so 10 rounds. So if you're at the height we were at 1,200 feet, we'd only be covering half the distance. So the question is then, do we essentially, our new height as in terms of any falling damage, start at 600 feet?
Yeah, I would say so. I can't see why that wouldn't be. I mean, that's kind of the point of Featherfall, too. It's what? Verbal only. There's no somatic components. There's no
material component.
Yeah, you have to have a small feather.
I hope you catch a bird on the way down, then, if you don't have your if you don't have your material components.
Well, if you're riding a griffin, don't they have feather? Just pluck one off here.
Yeah, true.
Just grab a really small feather off the griffin.
Yeah, that'll work. But yeah, no, I would even go so far to say that you could cast it, like, not right before you hit the ground, but like around before you hit the ground or something like that, depending on how DMs want to do their falling damage mechanic.
That's something you'd have to discuss with your DM specifically, I would say, to kind of figure out how is falling working.
Yeah, because Featherfall is totally supposed to protect you from this exact thing. That's the only thing it does, so.
Well, and it slows your descent to 60 feet per round, but it doesn't say what from.
Right. But it does say that you won't take damage when you hit the ground if it's still active. So I imagine once you start, I can't see any other reason why it wouldn't just, start as soon as the spell ends. If you happen to be falling such a far distance that the spell would end, which is what, 10 rounds, 6 rounds?
It's 1 minute, so 10 rounds.
That's a far distance.
600 feet.
Wait a minute, it's 1 minute?
It lasts for 1 minute.
Yeah.
You'd hit the ground no matter where you were falling from, probably. You'd have to be in outer space not to hit the ground.
We dropped 1,200 feet, remember?
Yeah, but like, I think when we did the...
seconds, well, right?
Yeah, we did the math, it was like 2 rounds. 10 to 14
yeah,
seconds.
Yeah, that's falling at the speed in which terminal velocity would be. This means you're slowing your speed.
To 60 feet.
It says you fall 60 feet per round.
You're right.
You're falling essentially at a dash towards the ground.
You've reduced your speed.
So it takes longer.
So
it takes a lot longer. It does specifically say, though, if you land before the spell ends, you take no falling damage. So, I mean, essentially, I would agree with you that you're falling at such a slow rate that as soon as the spell ends, any additional distance, that's the new height that you would be falling at.
Yeah, I think so, too.
That makes sense.
I agree with that one.
And, of course, if you had more, it's a level one spell, right? So, I mean,
it's a reaction.
And if you just had more of those that you could cast, like if you didn't burn all your spells, you could just cast it again. If it takes that long to fall, you know, like you'll have time to cast it again.
Well, if it's a reaction though.
Yeah, but like once you start falling slower, you would start having more rounds.
Yeah, instead of having 2 rounds in which you hit the ground, you'll have 10 rounds before before the spell even ends.
Yeah. So yeah, you could just cast it again. That wouldn't be a big
deal. But to me, hearing a reaction means there has to be an action that counters it.
You're saying a trigger.
Yeah, there's no trigger anymore because you're out of the distance, unless you're saying that when Featherfall comes off and you begin falling again, that's the new trigger.
That's what I would say would be a new trigger, because essentially something has happened, the spell has ended, and you have a new reaction.
Makes sense.
That's what I would rule personally.
That's interesting. You're right. I didn't even think of the reaction part, because that means you can't cast it willingly.
Yeah, you can't just say, oh, I'm going to cast on you, and it lasts for a minute, just in case you fall.
It actually says, casting time, one reaction which you take when you or a creature within 60 feet of you falls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not bonus action or an action.
No, you're right. That's weird.
So that last bit, essentially being able to cast it again, I guess that's a little bit up to the DM, because you are... falling again at a new speed, but...
My understanding is it wouldn't be continuous. You'd have a gap.
Yeah, you would increase in speed all of a sudden.
Yeah, so you're float, 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 and then all of a sudden start dropping again, which could be a new trigger for the reaction.
Yeah.
And that would be a debate between any players and the DM, I would say, just as to, you know, you fall the rest of the distance too quickly to react, or fall part of the distance and we're able to react, or just can't cast it at all.
You'd have to be an awfully evil DM.
There are evil DMs out there.
I am not one of them. Please, can you guys confirm this?
You are not an evil DM.
Oh, you're terrible. No.
You're not even an evil player. You just play a drow.
Oh.
A very snobby drow.
Yeah.
She's not evil. She's just obnoxious. There's a difference.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But no, that you'd have to be an evil DM not to save players with Featherfall. That would just be horrible. But there doesn't seem to be anything in Featherfall that would allow you to, like, cheat the system, so to speak.
Yeah, I think they actually did a good job on that one.
That one's well worked.
Yeah. Do y'all want to cover what, like, the giant stuff now?
Well, what about Misty Step?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Sorry, we've only got a couple things listed there. So what's Misty Step do?
So Misty Step, I love Misty Step. That's my spell. You basically turn into, like, a ball of mist and almost, like, teleport to a new spot 30 feet away. So just, boop, it's only a verbal component. It's a bonus action, so it's pretty quick.
How many feet?
30 feet. It's a very small window of saving your ass. But this was the one where we were questioning, would you maintain velocity?
That was the big reason, because if you're close enough, you could potentially negate all the velocity you had and...
By Misty Stepping.
Fall 50 feet instead of 1,000 feet.
It just says, briefly surrounded by silvery mist, you teleport up to 30 feet to an unoccupied space that you can see.
I could see the ground coming at me.
True. I guess it would be dependent on what teleport says then, because teleport in that context would be like referencing the spell, like teleport as in the spell teleport.
That's a good point.
Let's see. The teleport spell instantly transports you and update willing creatures of your choice that you can see within range, or a single object that you can see within range, to a destination you select.
It's a long spell.
It's really long.
So unlike Dimension Door, where it actually says you appear at the exact spot of your choosing, doesn't say anything along those lines, so it's possible, depending on the DM's interpretation, that you just, your momentum's maintained.
Yeah.
Huh.
I would like to convert my thing to go sideways instead of down.
Now, essentially, if you do that, you could potentially...
negate some of it.
Yeah, if you look at it, your dimension, you're casting Misty Step, so you teleport 30 feet off to the side so that you propel all that velocity off to the side. And then just drop again.
Only I hope you don't hit a tree.
Well, we're assuming you know when the ground is arriving, or rather when you're arriving at the ground.
We're close enough.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting question. Does that mean you can change your orientation when you teleport?
There's actually nothing saying that you can't.
Exactly. It says you teleport to a spot you can see. I'm assuming if it's a spot that's angled differently, you're going to orient appropriately.
It's an unoccupied space.
I don't know about that. That's interesting.
Usually space refers to, of course, like a space on the floor, but...
Yeah, a 5-foot square.
Yeah.
Or hexagon, as the case may be.
So for flavor reasons, you could basically say someone who just learned how to do teleport, or someone practicing teleport or something like that, potentially teleports themselves but angled incorrectly so that they fall, like, on their butt.
Yeah, usually they fall on their back, they fall on their stomach, they fall on their head just because they angled themselves incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
If you wanted to play to that extent.
But really, we haven't answered the question of, is there conservation of momentum, I think, is the outstanding...
In Misty Step, not in Teleport.
Well, in Misty Step and therefore in...
Teleportation.
Yeah, teleportation situations.
Dimension Door we were talking about, it sounded like we essentially agree that Dimension Door kills your momentum.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes sense to me.
Misty Step... I don't know. I would actually lean Misty Step does not kill your momentum.
Because it's moving, because you're stepping.
Yeah.
As opposed to being a door you go through.
Oh my god, that would make for such a weird gameplay mechanic.
You just, like, you're falling 1,200 feet, and then the last 50 feet you decide to Misty Step to the side so that you're now, like, ejecting your side, you know, self to the right, and then you slow your descent.
So you may take some damage if you slam into anything going in that direction, but your drop would then only be 50 feet.
Exactly. So you wouldn't take, you know... 20d6, you might only take like 8d6.
Yeah.
So really, it's like that scene in WALL-E where he has the fire extinguisher out in space. which I think was scientifically accurate, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, just like all movies. I'm actually really interested in the portal idea. I'm thinking teleportation circle.
Okay.
So what if you were to, only because I think we put this down a while ago, and I kind of forgot we had that discussion really briefly, because it takes a minute to cast. But what would happen if someone tried to catch, because you made a quick mention, Tony, of what would happen if somebody tried to catch somebody with a teleportation circle? Would it conserve momentum, or what would happen exactly?
So essentially, when the teleportation circle works, you step into the space, and then you are at the other circle, the permanent circle. Essentially, if you're falling into that and it activates as you, right before you're about to hit it.
It should be tough to time.
Tough to time. Let's say for a Skrull, they're able to do it because a Skrull just takes the action.
Yeah, true.
You will appear in the other circle, basically hitting the ground on the other circle. I would say that your momentum stays the same there, because you can use teleportation circle and move as if you move 5 feet into the other space.
So you basically splat at the other entrance.
Well, it actually says within the description, any creature that enters the portal instantly appears within 5 feet of the destination or in the nearest unoccupied space if that space is unoccupied.
So I think here's the big question. Do portals in D&D work like portals in the game Portal?
I would actually lean yes.
I would love to see people spout out of a teleportation circle, just whee, making a huge entrance.
But I don't know. It uses the phrasing, you appear, which kind of seems like you apparate in some sense. Not that you are moved there, but you appear there. But appear is kind of a squirrely word, I guess.
It's a slippery slope, Bethany.
So that's kind of up to how you want to interpret that specific term, because I think that's what it hinges on.
I'm thinking a DM would have to rule one way or another on the whole rule set of any kind of teleportation has conservation of mana or it doesn't, but one way or the other, not like a per spell basis. Mm-hmm. So that your teleportation circles either gave the ability for portals or gate gave the ability for portals, but otherwise it wouldn't do anything.
Honestly, if this came up, which I now I'm like opening a door that I won't be able to close since you guys are my players.
And it's recorded.
Yep.
Yeah. There's proof forever. I would say that I think your momentum doesn't continue if you guys could manage to get a teleportation circle open as a player falls through it, I would let them live and not give them the falling damage because it's only open for one round. That would be incredibly difficult, but I don't think it's like Portal. My understanding is you appear in this new place.
So guys, we need to get a helm of teleportation is all I'm hearing.
Put it on the list.
And then you can fall out of the sky with impunity.
Exactly. You guys heard it here first.
Although then the question comes up of what do you like the, oh God, there was a, I think there was a superhero movie that had to do with this. What about the force damage of stopping and starting very quickly?
Oh, like Whiplash?
Yeah. Like what if you get Whiplash from like suddenly teleporting and you're,
and then stopping?
Yeah. Like rapid deceleration.
Ooh. I don't think that's ever been a mechanic in D&D. None
that I know of.
It's a nice academic question.
Which is why people can fall hundreds of feet and still survive.
Yeah, only 20d6.
I mean, it has happened in real life. People have fallen from planes and survived. Mm-hmm. Not a lot.
Not a lot. But, and their guts may look like nasty, but you know.
Yeah, it's that nat 20.
Yeah. There's always nat 20s in real life and in D&D. Yeah.
What does Arcane Gate do?
Create linked teleportation portals that remain open for the duration, within 500 feet of each other.
They're magical glowing rings that are filled with mist.
Ooh.
I think they stole this straight from Portal.
I'm pretty sure.
It doesn't say what color they are.
The portals are two-dimensional glowing rings covering inches from the ground and perpendicular to it at the points you choose.
This sounds a lot like Portal.
Yeah. It also sounds like your momentum would not be lost on this one. Because it says, any creature or object entering the portal exits from the other portal as if the two were adjacent to each other.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true. The wording is different on this one. So maybe you can't do an across-the-board ruling because these spells all have slightly different.
Yeah.
This one, you just walk through it as if it's right next to each other.
You're right. This one's literally portals.
Yep.
Yep.
Can we have a portal campaign? Now that let's have a portal campaign.
That would require an evil DM. for sure.
That's absolutely true. It's a sixth level, too.
It's a powerful spell.
By the way, this is, for those who don't know the party, this is a group who does not have a wizard, so most of these are academic questions anyways.
We have a sorcerer. That's about it, though.
Yeah, but he does damage.
You have a sweet paladin.
Yeah. Misty Step.
At Misty Step, man. That's all I'm bringing to the table.
I can't believe there's a portal spell in here. That blows my mind.
There is a portal spell.
So when I was doing that little one-off session, Josh, I did a lot of research on portals, and it gets messy. It's like time travel, which I also did for that session. It gets complicated really fast. You can break the game in no time. So you can add that to the list, time travel. We'll have to go to a different edition for that one, though.
Why? Is 5e didn't have any good time travel?
5e has no time.
It has time stop.
Yeah, but that's stops time for the one caster.
Yeah, I know. That's it. It's really not a time travel mechanic.
Have anybody have any other thoughts on terminal velocity, or have we exhausted all possible?
Well, I don't think, did we ever, like, come to a conclusion?
I think we should have it.
I think it depends on the spells.
Terminal velocity should exist, but then the second part is conservation of momentum.
It sounds like the majority of the spells, based off of what we were discussing, kill your momentum.
Except the gate.
Except for Arcane Gate, which actually says it acts like you are just traveling within 5 feet. Everything else is you appear in a spot.
Okay, so I'm going to throw this out. Feel free to shoot it down immediately.
Paint us a picture.
Paint a picture. You're falling. You put the one down, or the one that you're going to fall into on the ground, and right next to it, you put the one that's going to shoot you up.
Yeah.
How high do you go? Because you'd eventually reach a point and then fall back down.
I think you should just play Portal.
Yeah, it's basically the game Portal. You just bounce back and forth.
Well, no, because that spell only lasts a certain time, right?
That's true.
So it only lasts for up to, it's a concentration and up to mint, which means you can drop it as soon as you pop out the second portal. You drop it, so you only shoot up how far?
You'd shoot up as far as you fell down, or just a little less than that.
In a round.
There is one problem with this.
Yeah?
Arcane Gate specifically says that the portal is cast onto the ground as a two-dimensional glowing rings filled with mist hovering inches from the ground and perpendicular to it.
Oh.
At the points you
Wait, where's that at?
Oh.
So it is not flat on the ground.
So you can't even fall into it.
Well, that's just bullshit. They ruined that whole spell.
Unless you're falling. What if you're falling close enough to a building that you can cast it on the side of a building coming out? Then it would be perpendicular to the building, but parallel to the ground.
Use 2 points on the ground that you can see.
Yeah.
Ground is based on your perspective.
It's okay. Here's what you do. You use your bonus action to Misty Step to the side and then cast Arcane Gate, so you just fly through it.
So other way around then. Oh, no, I guess you would have to cast the gate first.
Yeah, Misty Step into the gate.
I can't believe they ruined that spell. I wanted a portal.
Damn you, Tony, and reading things.
Just ask a DM if it's okay.
That's no good at all.
Yeah, D&D is officially ruined because it's not Portal.
Ugh.
Because we can't Misty Step through portals.
Okay, anybody got anything else on terminal velocity? Oh, no, we didn't reach our conclusion.
Yeah.
Well, first off, I think it should be raised to 180d6.
I would actually be fine with that, the terminal velocity as it is. I mean, just keep increasing the d6 for however high you are up until 180.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ugh.
That's a ton of damage. It's ridiculous, but...
Just about everyone would die.
I guess the question is, do you want... From the DM side, do you want to terrify your players so they never take to the skies? Because I think that's what I've done unintentionally.
We went back on that castle.
You did. I was very proud.
We went back.
Yeah.
Not to fight dragons.
No, we're not going anywhere like that again.
But I think it adds a really exciting element of danger to aerial combat. If you can't die. If you can't die, then there's really fighting dragons in the sky isn't such a big deal.
Yeah, that's why Tony and I got on that conversation the whole time. You were fussy because you were like, Uthal can just walk away from this. Like, potentially conscious. Not even a discussion of whether or not he was dead.
If I'm conscious, I will not take my negative max in damage, so.
Yeah, there's like no chance of you dying, and there's a good chance of you not becoming unconscious if you happen to fall off at full health.
Yeah, if I fall at full health, I most likely will remain conscious.
So I would say, for anybody who's really trying to freak your players out, absolutely up it to 100. And I think 180 is cleaner than 190. So you can roll 180 d6 for 1,800 feet. Anything above 1,800 feet, you'll be fine. Walk it off.
And they should have a cleric.
And the cleric shouldn't fall.
No. The cleric should have raised dead.
Yeah, Ray's dead at that point, because I don't think you're going to make it to the ground.
Not that quickly.
Yeah. So that would be the best thing. As for the portals, who knows?
Apparently we've ruled portals are case-by-case basis.
Actually, overall, we did rule that the portals kill your momentum.
Except for
Arcane Gate, but that you can't actually place on the ground, so it winds up not really mattering, unless you're, like, being thrown through it.
Well, and then there's Gate, too.
Yeah, well, what about Gate? We didn't talk about Gate.
Gate also, that's right, Gate tells you to another plane of existence, but it says you appear in a space near.
Yeah, you can orient that any direction you choose.
Hmm.
So it does sound like it's still.
It sounds like it would kill your momentum.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
So for the most part, the only one that would actually act like a portal in the game are the ones you can't actually use like that because they have to be mounted perpendicular to the ground.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's no fun. I'm really butthurt about this.
Well, the other thing, I know you, Rachel, you started to bring up, right before was, what if you were inside a bag of holding?
Oh.
Well, no. It was, what if you were falling and somebody tried to catch you in a bag of holding?
Say you were a small creature in this scenario.
Well, yeah, you'd have to be like a gnome or a halfling or a very, very, very tiny and skinny
elf.
Dwarf. Yeah.
A skinny dwarf.
Yes,
please.
Because there's that, and then there's the portable hole as well.
Yeah, so we were looking at the bag of holding. It's only 2 feet in diameter, so...
Catching someone, really tough.
And they really couldn't be wearing armor.
Maybe they have really good acrobatics and can, you know, catch you.
Isn't there a feat? No, I must be thinking of something else. Something ridiculous, like you can, like, land in, like, No, I think I might be talking about a dream I had once. Disregard entirely.
Tell us about this, Josh. We'd love to hear it.
Wait, I was going to say, isn't there a feat where you can, like, land in a glass of water? But I'm like, I must be remembering a cartoon that I saw once.
All right, that got weird.
I think this is unrelated entirely. I think I might just be too hot right now. I got to turn on the fan. But I think the giant, what was it, the giant hole?
Portable hole.
But the portable hole would probably be best because that's 6 foot in diameter.
Yeah, but you can't use it to save yourself because it has to be placed on a solid surface. So your party members would have to drop it below you. But it still is 10 feet deep, so I think you would just fly 10 feet further into a hole.
Oh, so you would just get an extra d6 of damage.
But if you're already at the 180 max, it doesn't matter at that point. Now you just don't make a crater.
Yeah, well, you would. It would just be, I guess what you're trying to do at that point is make a nice, like, they cleaned up after themselves.
Here's the body bag.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, you just fold it up and any creatures inside will stay in that space.
Yeah, it's just for easy cleanup.
So you're saying once they're dead, this is where you store them until you raise dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you know they're going to die when they hit the ground.
That's like the watermelon.
You want to explain that one?
That one's up to Rachel. No. Rachel, you got to explain the watermelon because now I got to put it in the show notes because I've referenced it.
I don't know the name of the stuff, but a coworker of mine was telling me about a coating that they use for things like industrial truck beds that, you know, they don't want them getting scratched. And basically they did a test on it where they coated a watermelon and then they threw it off. Like the top of a building, you know, some ridiculous, like 120 feet. And it hit and bounced and everything. Didn't shatter, didn't break open. But when they picked it up, they said, or, you know, my coworkers told me you could just hear, like, the sloshing inside. So it basically liquefied the interior of the watermelon.
I think I found the video. Did this watermelon survive? Oh, this one exploded.
The first one?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. That is horrifying.
Oh, my God. It bounces so high. Holy crap.
So that's what it looks like when you pop back out of a...
They throw it off like a radio tower, not a building. Yeah. Jesus.
I don't know.
It's called Line X. Can they sponsor us?
I will look into it.
150-foot tall tower.
Wow.
I would like my armor coated in that, please.
You want liquefied organs?
Are you sure about that?
So the comparison that this has really been brought up for is Tony's character was wearing magical armor when he fell.
So it did not get destroyed when I slammed into the ground.
Yeah, so the theory is that it kind of held him together so he could be revivified. So, yeah, no body parts went flying. Because really... At that point, the amount of damage you would have taken, there really wasn't going to be any coming back from it.
And who wanted to hear that description? Nobody.
Nobody. I'm like, so do you want to know what you see? Nope. No one wants to know. Nope. Okay. We won't talk about it. This watermelon thing is awesome, by the way.
Yeah, that's going in the show.
I can't stop watching it.
That's hypnotic.
It is pretty mesmerizing.
Thank you for sharing, Rachel.
How did we get on the topic with the watermelon?
Bag of holding.
Oh, that's right. We just fold that up.
No, portable hold.
Or the portable hold.
So.
Okay, really what you went to was, how do you keep the body tidy once they die? I think is where this came from.
Because they are going to.
Yeah, that's perfect. I think the portable hold is exactly what that watermelon does. It just keeps all the mess contained.
Yeah, just fold it up as soon as the body drops, and you're good.
Yeah, and just tote it away. But this brings up an interesting point, which... you were talking about bags of holding before and small creatures. Can a small creature who possesses a bag of holding have enough time while falling 1800 feet to pull out their bag of holding and shove themselves into it so that the bag of holding harmlessly hits the ground? And then someone just has to get them out of it before they suffocate.
I don't know.
It's a good question. I'm studying bag of holding right now.
I would say you have two rounds to do this.
Okay, but here's the thing. The bag of holding can be overloaded, pierced, torn, ruptured, or destroyed.
So you'd have to have enough space, and you can't be pokey. Like, if you've got stilettos on, that's just right out.
No. Here's what I'm saying. The bag of holding is vulnerable to damage.
So here's what winds up happening. The person can survive, but if the bag of holding hits the ground, even if the weight is below the 500 pounds, it potentially gets ripped and everything inside is scattered in the astral plane.
True. But I can't imagine a bag. Like, we've talked about how people have survived certain falls. I can't imagine a backpack would hit the ground and it'd just be just destroyed unless it caught on a tree or something.
Or a sharp rock.
Or a sharp rock potentially. But that's not even going to do that much damage because the backpack's going to have more drag and it's not going to fall at the speed a human would.
So here's the thing. I think, as Rachel's pointed out, unless the terrain is specifically described, you guys assume everything is an open field. Whereas in most of D&D, the terrain is not open fields. It's mostly like forests with really pokey trees, mountains with really pokey rocks. There's going to be something on the other end besides just a flat ground. We've been assuming through all this that you are arriving at a nice flat ground. This is because we all live in Florida.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Wait, there's other terrains?
So we assume all terrain is flat, sandbar, maybe some trees. So I think that's an oversight on our part.
Well, going back to the argument, even if the person's able to get themselves in the bag of holding and it does get destroyed, they'll still be alive just in the astral plane.
No, they won't, because I thought there's no air and they would die.
That's if they remained in the bag.
But if the bag is torn and destroyed, then they just are released into the astral plane, which means they're just out there.
They're scattered.
Yeah. And you can live in the astral plane, right?
Yeah, you can live.
So we're choosing between bloody pulp on the ground or potentially ejected into the astral plane.
Pretty much.
I'd go for the astral plane. At least you're alive. And couldn't they, if you created another bag of holding, isn't there a way you can pull things back from the astral plane?
Well, the easiest way is to find a portal in the astral plane.
Yeah, you could use a gate.
Teleport circle. Not teleport. Astral. No, what was the other one we were talking
about? You need a gate spell for that.
You need an actual gate spell.
Yeah.
Or the plane shift spell.
But gate's a level 9 spell, so to get this guy back, like, you might just be running around town, like, anybody cast gate? Anybody?
That's why you need plane shift. It's a level 7 spell, a little easier.
But they're alive.
So much easier. Level 7 spell.
Well, it's the difference between a level 18 character and a level, like, 13 character.
Yeah. Although a level 13 character would probably just survive the fall, unless, of course, it was 180.
No, so what you're saying is, you don't do this, you die, and you have someone cast Revivify on you or raise dead.
At that point, yeah.
Unless you're the cleric, in which case.
Yes!
Oh, cleric, jump in the bag. Cleric, jump in the bag.
So here's what we need to do. Here's the plan, guys. Everybody, the cleric holds the bag of holding. And everybody puts their stuff in the cleric's bag of holding. And then when the cleric falls out of the sky, he shuffles into the bag of holding.
Here's the problem, though. You can't be a human cleric. He will not fit.
It has to be a small creature. It's not wide enough for a medium-sized
creature. Hang on, and this is a great segue into our next segment, unless it's a giant bag of holding.
Oh, God. Okay.
Today's show is brought to you by Amazon.com. Now, Amazon offers millions of products, but I wanted to recommend something specific. D&D Spell Cards by Gale Force 9. These cards are ideal for players who want a quick reference guide to all their spells during gameplay. The cards are by no means required to play the game, but I find them to be an invaluable tool for wizards, warlocks, druids, sorcerers, rangers, paladins, and clerics. Essentially anyone playing a character that can cast a spell. The cards are made of high-quality cardstock and laminated for protection against rowdy players who may spill a drink or two during exhilarating battles when nat 20s are rolled. Each card has listed key information at the top, such as casting time, spell components, duration, and range, along with more details about the spell's mechanics on the body of the card. They come color-coded to the type of caster you are playing, so telling cleric spells apart from paladin spells and so on is a breeze. To check out their largest deck, which is perfect for arcane casters covering all wizard, warlock, and sorcerer spells from cantrips to level 9, simply click the link in the show notes or go to rulesaswritten.club/arcane. That's arcane spelled A-R-C-A-N-E. By using the links below, you help support the show, which we very much appreciate. Thanks again to Amazon for supporting us and for Gale Force 9 for creating an excellent accessory for players and DMs alike.
So, do you want me to give the background on how I opened this can of worms?
Please, please do. All
right. So, we've been doing Prince of the Apocalypse, and it's gotten a little monotonous, so we are segueing into some adventures from Storm King's Thunder. And this brings up the whole challenging element of giants. And everything in the book says it's all scaled for giants. They have giant chairs, giant beds, giant stairs that are 4 feet high. And this was just an interesting sort of challenge for the players navigating around until it came to the question of giant potions and other magical items. Now, granted, some items like magical armor resize because of their magicalness to fit anyone, but there really isn't a guideline I could find on how magical potions scale. And it doesn't make sense that a giant would consume a healing potion of the same size as, you know, a halfling to get the same level of benefit.
This was perfect because when you introduced this concept, I think you introduced it with potions and with the two different things that came into the game all at the same time where we all kind of stared at each other like, what's in the chest? Because there was potions, which volumetrically should be cubed, I think is what we all kind of decided, to where like a giant potion would be worth like...
So I thought we'd figure 16.
Well, a giant being 3 times the size of any of our characters.
Yeah. So a shorthand I used was everything is about 3 times bigger based on the average height of the characters and the average height of the cloud giants in this case. So I just said, it's 3 times bigger. And this was a mistake on my part as a DM.
Because we discovered, I think, like, what, a potion should be like 27 doses per potion because it's actually cubed.
Well, because it's 3 times bigger in every dimension.
Right. And so scaled up, like a giant potion would be like a gallon of potion to us. If a regular potion is a few, like 4 ounces or 8 ounces, then that'd be so much potion. But it happened at the same time you gave us the chest, too.
Yeah.
So we had this chest that had, what, some giant miscellaneous, oh, there's some whatever in here.
And gold. Giant gold bars.
Yeah, cloud giants are weird and stuff. They're like, there's some gold in there, some old clothes, some whatever. Take it.
But giant gold would be like, what, like tires? Like we'd be holding a tire of gold?
No, I think like dinner plates.
which again are worth how much? Like having melted it down, we now have the richest thing in the world because some giant was like, oh, I don't need it anymore.
Honestly, you guys haven't counted it yet. You don't even know how much is in there.
We have no idea. We know they're in there.
We're going to be so rich. And all those gems.
You guys are already loaded. You're like the most wealthy adventurers who continue to adventure ever.
Silence, Infidel. We need more.
We only have like 9,000 gold.
We need more.
I've been a very generous DM, and you guys have been so frugal.
Well, I guess we have. I mean, we've been saving up for the town.
We also have been too busy, like, killing things.
I think part of it is also none of us want to be too selfish about spending party gold on something that would only benefit one person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've been saving it for the town, I think, because every once in a while we remake the town because that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Are you going to give some background on the town, or do we want to save that for another time? The Sims experiment with the town.
I think we should give some background on the town, but if we mention the... Screw it, there's spoilers. Red Larch.
We've already talked about so much already. I mean.
So, in Princess of the Apocalypse, your starting town is a little place called Red Larch, named after some beautiful red larch trees. There's some small adventures to sort of get the player started up to level 3 there. And throughout these adventures, you find out that the elders of the town are secretly evil, basically. And my party decided to deal with that the only way they could, which was to run them out of town on a rail, which left a power vacuum in the town, which they were really concerned about. Rather than moving on to the adventure, they decided to install one of the players as mayor of the town. The NPCs were pretty open to this. They've been well treated. And this sort of began the era of responsibility for the whole party to care for the town of Red Larch.
It's been bad. Like, they left an entire underground fortress. How could we not take it?
It was a tomb. It was a tomb, just to be clear.
It had a floating room.
Yeah, rocks float in the room.
It's a magical tomb.
It's our house. Don't you judge it.
It's our base, where we live now.
Tony, you built a forge in there.
I did, and I'm excited to actually use it.
Yeah, early on in the campaign, the players really wanted to invest a large quantity of their spoils in infrastructure. Really? Not just building up this base, but like building up the buildings around town, building a wall, which now sounds like a bad thing, but no, it's to keep people safe.
All right, we built up a prison, we built the wall, we've trained a small militia.
We have an aerial unit. We brought in the Arakacraw.
Oh, gosh.
And now we have cloud giants on our side, by the way.
Yeah, so this small town the players are supposed to begin in and perhaps never return to has become, like, the crux of the whole campaign. Like, if there's any threat to this town, they will, like, burn anyone to the ground who is between them and Red Larch and their gang of orphans they rescued that live there, and their chef they rescued.
Yeah, if there's anybody who ever sticks out, we just take them home. We're like, okay, we'll hire you. Come live at our town and work with us.
I tried to get the mercenaries. You wouldn't let me keep them.
And the ogres were a no. I believe the party voted no on recruiting the ogres.
But we have a bunch of kids from somewhere. Oh, right. We saved them from, what was it?
Yartar.
Yeah, but what was the creature that was eating them?
Oh, the wraith?
That's right.
Yeah, that's a non-canonical adventure I added.
Oh, good. So that's not spoilers. Excellent.
That's not spoilers.
Oh. Awesome, because I just realized as I was saying it, like, ah, crap. I hope no one was planning on playing this campaign.
Honestly, no one should ever play this campaign. I mean, it's been great. It's been fun. But the best moments have really not been from the book.
So you're saying the book maybe doesn't make it easy for you?
Oh, gosh, no. This book has been the bane of my existence. Well, because it's they kept it so open-ended that it doesn't have a meaningful pacing to it. It's just like, here's some cultists. Here's 3 levels of cultists to go after. First level, second level, third level, final boss.
So, yeah, this is why we play The Sims.
Yeah, this is why you guys are like, let's build up the town. Let's build a wall. Let's build a treehouse for our bird people.
Also, if it's written like Mines of Phandelver, it has a weird level of, like, detail where it's, like, sometimes just enough to get you, like, going in the right motion, but not all-inclusive. So it's like, I know nothing about this guy except his name, and he has this quest. But why does he have this quest for my players?
Yeah.
Oh, I've dealt with that with the book I'm running, too.
We're all running official Wizards of the Coast adventures because it seemed like it would be easier.
All right, so my book is significantly better written, Out of the Abyss.
I can vouch for this from what Tony's shown me. His has, like, a reasonable level of detail.
But every once in a while, I'll get a portion of, okay, now the party will go and meet with a few people. I don't get what race the individuals are, but I will get a list of names, and that is it.
Woo!
At least you get names. Mine says things like, they can go to this town. Enough said.
All right, then.
Enough said. Here it is on the map. That's all you need to know.
So you do have an official map. There is a full map of everything, but it doesn't really list any kind of personalities of the different cities.
Oh, for the Deseret Valley, which is where the whole campaign takes place? Yeah, it has a list of all the locations. You guys pretty much have it all sketched out now.
I thought.
But yeah, it doesn't have really lengthy descriptions for most of it. So a lot of those little, like, special nuggets you guys have enjoyed are not from the book. Yeah. Anything that involves cheese, that's probably not from the book. There have been way too many cheese moments in retrospect.
Our party doesn't like cheese. What are you talking about?
We love cheese. Literal cheese, by the way. This is not figurative cheese.
I don't know why we haven't had a cheese plate at D&D. I should bring one next time.
I love cheese.
Why have we not done fondue? All right, so this got off topic.
This got way off topic.
I don't know if you want to save this for something else, Josh.
We were talking about giant potions.
This is one of those instances where you've basically had to put your foot down on the capacity stuff because the math behind it is
yeah, no.
Yeah, D&D takes place in the Forgotten Realms, which is a fantasy world. It has its own math, I like to think. Like its own physics. So the factor of three we decided for potions applies to the number of uses rather than the dimensions. Because otherwise, you guys would be like, giants, make us 10 healing potions, and we shall never have to buy a healing potion again.
Exactly.
So wait, so the book has nothing on this then?
Oh, gosh. No, nothing.
So the chest that you gave us, that was your item, though, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, this is all, yeah, that's all original stuff. The chest was like, I'm going to do something nice for you guys. And look what happened.
Let's describe the chest because I don't think the people know about the chest.
Okay, so the chest is a unique item I created inspired by the spell Liamin's Secret Chest, which is kind of one of those weird spells that people don't use very often, where you have a standard-sized chest and a tiny replica of that chest made from the same materials. But I thought it would be funny to have this scaled up for giants so that the replica chest for giants would be appropriately sized for the party as like a standard sized chest.
Which we love. And we can use the tiny chest too, which I'm absolutely all about.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically they could use the tiny chest as long as they're touching the replica, the tiny chest, and their full size chest, they could send the full size chest to the ethereal plane for storage. So that's what they currently have done. They received this giant chest, which is like 30 feet long. Full of whatever the giants had left there. Like, they said there's some gold in there and some old clothes. They don't really... They're like, yeah, you can have it. We don't use it. It's yours. And the party's like, great. Let's send that off to the astral plane. We'll hold on to the replica. And we'll figure out what we're going to do with this later.
And later hasn't come up yet.
Nope, not yet.
Yeah.
This was recent.
But the coin's the size of dinner plates that it's like, how do you... like... What's that? I know we haven't actually gotten to it yet. Is there any consensus on what's that worth?
Oh, well, so it's going to be ingots, but it is giant-sized ingots. So I can't tell you. I can't reveal things the guys don't know yet.
Good try.
But you'll have to, I mean, all you have to do is look.
We got to look. Because a giant-sized ingot is going to be that's like a dog-sized ingot. Or like a, I'm picturing like a giant thing in a flatbed truck.
I'm picturing like a loaf of bread. How big is a regular ingot, though? Like, human-sized ingot.
A regular ingot would probably be about the size of your hand.
Yeah, let me go and check my stash of gold ingots, and I'll let you know.
I left them in the other room. I'll be right back.
Oh, no, right? It's fun. Like
in my other purse.
Like a foot long?
Oh, a foot long. Okay, they're bigger than I thought. I thought they were, like, maybe, like, 8 inches long.
I want to say they're about the size of your hand. 8 inches or so.
And about, like, what, 5 pounds, 7 pounds?
I would say if you put it next to a cat, it'd be quite big.
What, whose cat? Your cat, Josh?
But are we using Sierra-sized cat or a woolly-sized cat?
Okay, do we have to get background on cats?
No, we can't give background on cats. Hang on, let's use, okay. What would be a better unit of measurement than cats, then?
A loaf of bread.
A loaf of bread.
Then it would be...
Like a slice of bread?
Then it would be smaller than... A loaf of bread is a terrible unit of measurement.
It's not.
What about a bread box? I believe that's an accepted unit of measurement. Is it larger than a bread box?
I would say it looks, I bet you could pile a nice little amount into a bread box and it would look like a bunch of gold ingots in a treasure chest. I would say that's about accurate. Like a tiny treasure chest.
Mm-hmm. So like 8.
Yeah. They're big. And if you were to scale that up to human size, that would be like the size of one of those like rideable RC cars you give children.
The Barbie car,
which would be like hundreds of thousands of platinum, I think, in the game. It would just be massive.
The ingots would be almost the size of any of us.
Yeah,
yeah,
pretty close.
Well, wait, are we doing actual world scaling, or are we doing the rule of threes scaling?
Actual rule scaling means we just got a small fortune from some pennies left over in his sock drawer.
Basically.
Yeah. But if we're doing, like, Bethany's rule of threes, then we're getting, like each of those ingots is maybe, like, the size of a loaf of bread.
We'll have to just figure it out when we get to it.
I guess we'll
I'm
going to
bring a
it.
Loaf of bread.
I'm going to be hopeful. Yeah, I'm going to have to bring an ingot to compare next time.
Yeah, just bring several, actually. Bring one for everyone, if possible.
Yeah, to be fair.
Yeah.
That's I'm really excited now to see how that scales. But no, of course, the book adds giants and doesn't reconcile for this at all, given that they would be...
Well, it gives a lot of units of measurement for, like, anything in the space. So, like, here's the size of the doors, here's the height of the handles, here's the height of the stairs. So they really went granular on those sorts of things, but not, like, the magical items, which I guess is my fault for bringing them in. I could have said, no, the giants who live in a flying sky castle have no magical items or potions to share with you.
I'm still curious about their boars.
Oh, yeah.
Where did they get the boar from?
They are standard size boars. They are not giant boars. The creatures don't scale to meet their size, unfortunately.
So there's not a castle in the sky with a bunch of sky boars that are larger size boars that they then capture.
I did not make the mistake of going down that road, which I am grateful for.
This is disappointing.
It's like the regular sized goats in the goat moat.
Oh, the
goat moat.
I feel like I venture any critters, you guys go off the deep end. Like, there's critters! Yay!
Save them!
Yes, bond with them!
Moat, oh goat.
Oh, gosh. This was, to be clear, an unrelated moat next to a room of goats. There was not a moat of goats.
So, I don't know. Does anybody else have any thoughts on the giant capacities? Do we have anything else that we can... Like, that just shatters the game right there.
Well, giants kind of screw up everything. And you guys are like, why don't you guys come on down and, like, help us out? I'm thinking, they don't fit anywhere. They can't go into dungeons.
Yeah.
You can't bring a, you can't bring a giant anywhere. What are they, huge creatures?
They are huge creatures. They are 28 feet tall.
Depending on the type of giant.
Well, these in particular.
Yeah. Like, you can't take them out with you. You can't go to taverns with them. I mean, they're cool. They're really cool, but they're very complicated.
We should go carousing with them.
Carousing with the giants.
Oh, we'll end up squished.
Last time.
Oh, yeah, we'll be dead.
Yeah, squished.
Could you imagine the cheese I could bring home, though?
Giant cheese?
You should ask for a giant cheese.
It might kill someone if it falls out of the sky.
Oh, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Don't drop it, but you can give it to Grendo and have him cook something really good with it for, like, the whole town.
Do you want to include an explanation of who Grendo is? Grendo has been referenced and not explained. I think Rachel should tell the story.
Go for it, Rachel.
So we met this half-orc.
He's not a half-orc. He's a human.
We acquired a half-orc. I don't know. Where was that even at?
That was in...
Bardright,
that's right. I'm like, what shanty little town did we meet him in? He accidentally poisoned us, and we therefore thought it would be a great idea to acquire him as a personal chef.
We needed to save him from this terrible town.
Yeah, he was so sweet and innocent. We didn't want him to be destroyed. So we took him back, and my character has since had many fun evenings carousing with him and any other members. And he's our chef, and he is also... not a half-orc. He's actually a very, very, very handsome, apparently, human.
This brings up the brief mention of the checks.
The hotness rolls. We need to talk about hotness rolls real quick.
D20 hotness rolls.
This is an improvised mechanic, because it's come up a few times. So we meet a Lady Duergar. But how attractive is she for a Lady Duergar? There's only one way to find out. You roll a D20 and you let fate decide. So... Grendo was a nat 20, right?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, surprisingly attractive for a slight human with no skills besides cooking.
He's a damn good chef, though.
And he has no idea. He has no idea how hot he is.
Not a clue.
Nope.
That's part of his charm.
Yeah. Yep. So, and he's with my character, who, again, bald, burned multiple times.
Yep.
Yeah, she's 3 on a good day. let's be honest.
I think we rolled for you. I don't remember what we got.
I think it was a 3 or 4.
It was a three or a four. It was really bad roll.
It was a bad roll.
It was appropriately awful.
But she makes up for it with personality.
And kindness.
And money. You are loaded.
Yeah.
You are his sugar mama.
I'm okay with that. He makes me buns.
Oh, God.
His specialty is pastries.
Of course. He makes good pastries.
And they're delicious.
So that is the story of Grendo, the non-half-orc that was adopted by the party.
The majority of the campaign, you've been believing he was a half-orc.
Yeah, a lot of the campaign, I thought he was half-orc.
Oh, Grendo.
I had no idea.
So, okay. Yeah, so the giants are absolutely just, I don't know. Yeah, what are we going to even do about giants? All we can do is trade information with them. That's it.
I'm going to give them maps. I'm going to become a great cartographer since I have nothing else to live for in life.
That's right.
Oh, that's so sad.
Orphans and Scarlet the Bear and your goat.
Your miniature donkey.
Yeah, it's not a goat. What the hell?
Next step, goat. We all know it.
Maybe that's what I was thinking of.
She's taking one of those goats.
Oh, I planned on getting one of those at least.
I would be surprised if you didn't.
Yeah, you should have all of them. You should grab all of them. We'll go back to get the gems, and then we'll grab...
There are 16 goats! 16!
We need them to haul the gems.
Oh, God.
This is perfect.
What have I done?
I think this is less about breaking the game in general, and more about how we've broken your game to the point of...
Yes. It's not about breaking the game, it's about breaking your game.
Breaking Bethany.
Yeah, I feel like that's what it's come down to. But it makes every session exciting for me because it can all go horribly awry in like one little offhand comment I make.
Yep.
Oh man. Anything else on giants that we can even think of?
Not giants.
I'm good on that. I think what we've learned is the DM has to make a ruling to backtrack from a mistaken mention.
And the DM needs to choose her words very carefully.
Very carefully.
Always be on guard. Players are wily,
especially when dealing with tech writers.
Yeah. But what did you actually say?
Oh, you said it's 3 times the size? Oh.
I didn't mean it.
No, 3 use, 3 use.
I try not to retcon as much as possible, but it's hard sometimes.
It's really hard sometimes.
It's really hard. Yeah, so I've sometimes things just snowball, like it starts out as a little thing, and then before you know it, like there's an enormous wheel of cheese, like just rolling downhill.
You know what? It's not even on the list, but what this brings up carousing.
Oh, carousing.
Like we
All right. We could definitely talk about carousing. Tony, where's the section on carousing in the DMG? It's a tiny little thing. By the way, for the purpose of this podcast, nobody knows that Tony and I are married up until now.
That is true.
We are just separate individuals who happen to be here.
Found it. Characters can spend their downtime engaged in a variety of hedonistic activities, such as attending parties, binge drinking, gambling, or anything else that helps them cope with the perils they face on their adventures.
Yes.
So this came up in just like an offhand comment where I was like, oh, well, you know, when you have downtime, you could go carousing. And I think, Josh, you were like, what is this? Tell me what this is. I want to know more. Tell me more about this carousing. I have no idea what this means.
I was intrigued. I thought I had heard of most of the mechanics, you know, all the different actions you can take and stuff like that. But I was just like, what is this carousing you speak of? I've not heard of this. Describe this to me.
Basically, it's going out to a tavern, drinking lots of alcohol, and seeing where the night takes you. Which,
yes.
By the way, is not something we do in real life.
That you know of.
But in D&D, it's a whole other story.
It's so much safer in D&D. There's none of the negative effects.
It is.
Well, is it? Is it? Originally in the campaign, you guys were really focused on, like, destroying elemental evil and had no downtime. You just went from, like, adventure to adventure. So I think this was pretty far in. You guys were like, yeah, we actually have some time. Let's go carousing in Red Larch, because why not?
Well, that when I said that we should take a few days off, because I was like, we have nothing pressing right now. Why don't we take like 2-3 days to just do stuff?
There was a reason. Yeah. I think when somebody wanted to make something at a forge or something like that.
Yeah.
Probably Uthal, you wanted to use the forge, or somebody wanted to do a thing, or we were waiting on some NPC.
Weren't we waiting for the dwarf to go to the tomb?
Yes, you were waiting on the dwarf.
And I was recovering from having 5 points of exhaustion.
Was it that late?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this all happened very quickly.
Recent. Yeah, it happened pretty recently.
So the carousing table has, I think, is it six or seven effects?
Yeah, seven.
So the party exhausted these pretty quickly, and they really are of three different categories, right? Like, you make or lose money, you make an enemy, or you get into romance, or you wake up in a strange place, or you're in jail. Like, there's not a lot of variety. Pretty quickly, I think, Josh, your character made, like, all the money because you rolled really high.
I did. I cleaned out Chris, too.
Poor Chris. He rolled, like, I think just enough to, yeah, it was not good. Yeah, he was the one who was going to wake up in an alley having been robbed.
I wake up with strange men every time.
Yeah, you've had a...
Or animals. Or cheese.
Well, to be clear, this is animals you adopted. Let's not, like,
yeah.
This isn't some random animal. This is an animal you already know.
This is a pet. So I looked online, and there are people who have gone to a lot of effort to create exhaustive carousing tables.
It's beautiful.
So I have one that I modified that has 100 different things, and you guys are making pretty steady progress through the...
We must complete it.
Yeah. And it's led to some really interesting outcomes. That's how, Rachel, you got your miniature donkey.
Mm-hmm. And a purple dress.
I made a topiary.
Oh, yeah. You got a purple dress. You got a topiary. You guys got some buns one time.
We have a bear ball and a bear ball suit.
Yes, because, yeah, Chris engaged in the sport of bear ball.
Bear ball. Yes, we have the bear ball ball.
The bear ball ball.
He's a local legend.
Oh, gosh. What else has happened? There's been so many.
I am an official cheese inspector.
Well, that's why Grendo and Ash started going out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it all started.
Yeah, because they got drunk together.
Really caught,
oh.
He caught her eye.
Oh, that's right. Wayward almost made a deal with the devil.
Oh, right. He ran away from that.
Well, he pointedly did not make a deal with the devil.
He realized what was about to happen and ran away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fled in terror. Oh, yeah. And Rachel, you're the cheese inspector.
Yeah, the official regional cheese quality inspector.
With a certificate and everything.
We've had cheese busts made of ourselves.
The cheese busts. I forgot about those. Sculpted cheese.
We've done some weird stuff now that I'm thinking about it.
It all seems so normal at the time, right?
Yeah.
It also doesn't sound crazy at all when you think about time, right?
It's not all crazy. So, you can edit this out if you want, Josh. That's totally cool.
Feel free.
Oh, I'm keeping this shit.
Yeah, so carousing. Really easy to break the game with carousing.
And a lot of fun.
Oh, carousing makes for the best of times. We should carouse with the giants.
What is it?
That's a terrible idea.
Oh, don't do that to your DM. I have to have it all make sense.
Okay. Well, bring it up with the rest of the group. See how they feel.
Yeah. I know that's what you're really getting.
We'll table the discussion.
But seriously. Oh, there's a time that you woke up and you were in a house with just like a random family.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You got drugs.
That's how we met Sai's parents.
Yeah.
And you got drugs. The one time.
I did get drugs. Oh, my goodness. I have yet to use them.
Yeah. They're not actually in the player's handbook, really. Mentioned at all, are they, Tony?
No, they're not mentioned anywhere as far as I'm aware.
Are they extra stuff or what? What?
It's in, what's the book called, Tony? The Forgotten Realms.
Ed
Greenwood's Guide to the Forgotten Realms, I think, which I got Tony for his anniversary, I think. And it's got, like, everything you could want to know about the Forgotten Realms. Like, what do undergarments look like? What kind of drugs are there?
Oh, that's right. It fills in a lot of those weird details that nobody's ever asked.
The weird, super specific details.
No, that means somebody has asked.
Some like
point,
us.
At some point. Yeah, we're like, but really, how does this work?
Somebody just like us sat down and had a conversation at D&D said Wizards of the Coast, and they're like, okay, this is what we gotta do. We'll write a book.
Yeah. There's not a section on cheeses. I think that's missing because you guys have asked, what kind of cheese is it? I'm like,
I don't know. A hard cheese.
Can it be cheddar?
It's hard and salty.
It's always cheddar.
A hearty Gouda?
Yeah.
I think you did get a hearty Gouda, and it's been goat cheese before.
Mm, good stuff.
There's a lot of food-based stuff in our campaign.
I wonder why.
We like food.
You guys are very food-driven.
Yeah.
It is part of our plan.
Oh, gosh. Explain the strategy.
Step one, infiltrate. Step two, get fed. We do something during step three and profit on step four.
Sometimes sleep. Sleep.
Sometimes
I thought step three was pineapple.
Oh, step three was pineapple.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Which now we have to explain pineapple.
Pineapple is our code word for we're going to kill everyone.
For murder.
It's code word for murder.
Not murder. You guys aren't evil.
It's our murder word.
No, but it is to kill whatever's in the room.
It's our unsafe word.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, God.
It's your danger word.
Well, I loved our latest use of it because we were all just like, we were invited to dinner by the evil, somebody or another, the evil lady.
Stone giant.
Yeah, the evil stone giant who we're supposed to kill, and but we're not going to kill her yet. And so we were invited to dinner, and I think, Tony, you were like, well, I could go for some pineapple.
I'm just like, I'm just hungry for pineapple. But no one else wanted to, like, no, I don't want pineapple. I do not want pineapple.
Yeah, I think Chris was like, I am happy with the rations. Or is that you, Rachel?
No, that was Chris.
That was Chris.
Yeah, I'm happy with the rations I have.
So me and Tony were just sitting there like, we could, no, we're pineapple sounds great.
No, we would like some pineapple.
Pineapple sounds great, guys. Aren't you with us here? Pineapple sounds amazing. Like, no, rations are fine.
That wasn't a suspicious conversation at all.
I've got some dried pineapple in my rations.
Yeah, the stone giant failed her insight check. She was like, what is this? You guys are like, pineapple! No, pineapple.
They're really about their food, man.
Yeah, like, they're really specific. So that's the story of pineapple. I feel like we now have two podcasts, Josh. One where we talk about rules and one where we just talk about things that have happened.
I have no idea. I'm going to have to see how this edits because I am freaking clueless now. I'm excited, but not sure, because we were having a lot of fun with the random stuff in our group that's gone terribly wrong.
Because that's why we play D&D, for the nonsense,
right? It really, really is.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it's like that quote, you'll never remember what the numbers were rolled, but you'll remember what actually happened. Yeah.
Except for the nat ones with javelins.
Nat ones with javelins.
We don't speak of those?
Javelins. Bring it up. Let's talk about the javelins.
Would you like to explain, Rachel?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You started it, Rachel.
She did.
So I was really excited because my character had a ranged weapon sort of a javelin, which who the hell uses javelins? That's not like a common thing. So I thought it'd be really cool. I took, you know, four or five whatever javelins with me. And one of our first areas we went into, you know, we're trekking through this little underground area, and our little gnome rogue, halfling rogue. He's a halfling, right?
Halfling.
I always want to say gnome for sorry. Halfling rogue was in front of me, and I went to throw a javelin, and crit failed, and speared him in the back, and knocked him unconscious.
You skewered him through.
So after
he didn't die, right? He just became unconscious.
Yeah, he was just unconscious.
No, we wouldn't have cured that. He was just unconscious.
So.
No, he had, like, no hit points because he was
a
level one rogue.
Yeah. I did some lay on hands as I was, you know, removing the javelin in question and made him feel better. And then we get through to where the quote-unquote boss of the area was. Tony's character, Uthal, the tank, was up there, you know, melee attacking, and I was possessed to throw another javelin. And crit failed again and hit Tony and knocked him unconscious. So now javelins are banned in our region.
Well, that wasn't the end of the javelin.
That other one wasn't my fault. That wasn't
But there was also something else that happened where we're all level ones, we had all just met. If Uthal hadn't
known you personally,
you look like the evil crazy person who was like, oh, we've got them underground, now let me stab them all with my javelins.
Yeah.
So thank God y'all built like a history into your character backgrounds. Otherwise, you just seem like a crazy javelin killer.
He's like, no, she's really nice. She's just...
Of course, I'm saying this as, you know, helping to pull the javelin out of my side.
She's just misguided.
Yeah, she's just not good with javelins.
Yeah, the third instance we had no control over, but that was an Arakacra that hit an NPC in our town.
A commoner.
Oh, skewered a commoner. Oh, I felt so bad. It was all over so fast.
Only one character saw it, and he's gone now.
Yeah.
Well, and the character who saw it was the mayor, who, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. And the mayor, who before that even happened, before the Arakacra brought a javelin with them, because we didn't know, we had already illegally banned them from the city and had them all destroyed.
After that, we gathered every javelin and burned them.
There were notices posted. Mm-hmm.
There were. Yeah, it is illegal to own a javelin. Walking sticks are fine, but no pointy ends.
Not within Red Larch.
And then the Arakacra brought them and immediately killed a commoner, to which... cemented our belief of, no, javelins are just bad for us. We are not using them.
Javelins are bad.
Yep.
But then you guys are always excited when enemies have them.
Oh, because we know they'll hit each other.
Or they'll just hit us. Like, maybe javelins are just terrible, like, I don't know. Yeah, because has an enemy ever missed and stabbed some of their own with a javelin?
Yes.
They have?
Yeah.
Happened a couple of times.
Yeah, it has
happened.
Okay,
good.
And I don't fudge the roles. Like, it's uncanny how always weird things happen.
All right, so javelins are basically designed in this universe to kill whoever you are aligned with.
Yep.
Yes, basically.
So they've been outlawed.
Yeah, they're the ultimate enemy.
Perfect.
So giants, yeah.
We got nothing on giants. Oh, man.
Javelins.
We couldn't resolve anything on giants.
The only other thing about giants I can think of is I want my freaking summer home.
On the ethereal
My ethereal summer home, which...
With the secret chest.
Now, this won't work with the secret chest, which I only discovered afterwards, because if you actually look at the Liamon secret chest spell... I don't believe it lets a human, it doesn't let a creature through.
Yeah, you can't travel with it.
Yeah, so the chest can contain up to 12 cubic feet of non-living material. So of course you can't actually put anybody else in it. But before I had discovered that, my whole argument was, I want to be able to get into the chest and then be teleported to the ethereal plane. And this chest is so big that you could put like a whole bunch of building material in it and build a house on the ethereal plane and have a summer home on the ethereal plane. And
with all the ghosts,
which is fine. Like, you know, otherwise it's quiet, no neighbors, and it would just be like a neat thing to have. Like, why not do it? This got shut down rather quickly, which I'm disappointed in.
Well, for one thing, you can't get there yet. And for another, I explained to you the ether cyclones.
I'm not happy about the ether cyclones.
To explain that, essentially just a tornado through the plane that can throw you across the ethereal plane or even into the astral plane.
Which won't kill you, but it will be annoying. But since you can't teleport through Liamon's secret chest, then I'm assuming you'd have like a... What would be the best way to get to the ethereal plane otherwise?
Plane shift.
Yeah.
Which is a... What level spell is plane shift?
That's a 7th level spell.
Do you have that up or did you just know that?
I just know that.
I love you, but you're weird.
I have a good knowledge.
So, plane shift is what it is?
Yeah, plane shift allows you to travel to another plane of existence. I think with up to like 7 other people.
It's 8.
8 other people.
Wow, Tony, you were off by 1. Tisk, tisk.
Yeah.
That whole point.
Yeah. So that would be the way we could build a summer home then. Is we put the stuff in the chest, and then we teleport using plane shift to the ethereal plane, build our summer home, and then we have a summer home.
Well, what about gate? Couldn't gate be used also to get there?
Yeah, gate can get there too. Plane shift's just a lower level spell that you can use to get there.
Yeah, and it probably costs a lot less.
Yeah, because gate costs 5,000 gold.
Gate's expensive.
I mean, we've got 3 million from the giants. Who cares? But, you know.
It's not 3 billion.
Yeah, we did actually get several billion gold from the giants.
It scales, though.
Oh, gosh, you guys.
3 times the size. It's fine.
Can you imagine if one of the giants accidentally drops a coin off the side? Like, whoop, you know. And it
Oh, that's a house gone.
Yeah. And eventually destroys a house, but somebody will walk across what is a dinner plate of gold. Like, worth it.
And they're set for life.
Yeah, they can build another house and 500 more houses because gold in D&D is months of wages.
Oh my gosh, we haven't even talked about the scaling of the D&D economy.
The tiny little area that we're in, a gold can buy you almost anything.
That's for another time.
Let's add that to the list.
Is there anything else that we want to discuss on this? This one's probably hit its limit.
We should save I don't know if we wrapped it up rather nicely.
I think we'll save our other topics of discussion for another.
Yeah, I think we beat the topics to death. Is that what you were looking for?
Yeah, sure.
I think that's what we did.
I think we talked them to their exhaustion.
How many points? Yeah, can we do a next time?
On next week's episode.
To all the lovely listeners, if you've really enjoyed this and you have any input or corrections to make, please send your hashtag feedback to us on Twitter at RulesIsWritten, and we'll talk about it next time on the show. Otherwise, this is just us signing out. If there's not anything anybody else has to say.
Dinner time.
It's food time.
Food time.
Food time.
Send your feedback at Twitter to at, oh God, what is it? I'm so bad at this.
Rule.
At Rules is Written. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we did Rules is Written.
Yes, we did. Okay. So yeah. So send us send us your hashtag.
You can do it.
Start over, Josh. Start over. You got
I'm
it.
Already thinking of where the edit points are going.
Just start fresh.
Send us your feedback on Twitter at, God bless it. Send us your feedback at Twitter at RulesIsWritten, hashtag feedback. There's a better way to say this. Hang on a minute. Let me just type this out. Otherwise, I'll never get through it.
Do it like you're sending
your
a message.
Hashtag feedback at on Twitter.
On Twitter.
Twitter.
On the Twitter.
On the Twitter.
On the Twitter.
You can do it on the Twitter.
On the Twitter.
Okay, dear God.
Rules as written.
Not as.
Send, yeah.
Rules as written.
Oh, God.
Rules
oh,
as
no. Said. God, kill me. Okay.
Are we good?
Send.
All right.
You got this.
I think we need a countdown.
No, no, no. No countdown. Please. Don't make me any more flustered than I already am. Just send your feedback. Stop it.